I grew up in a little town called Rock Creek, North Carolina. Before that name was changed, it was the township of Patterson. My great-grandfather, who was the son of a plantation owner and a slave, he was the product of the slave and the plantation owner. My grandmother, Cora Patterson, she was the product of a slave and a plantation owner, and they were budding plantations. His name, all I ever knew him was Pop Patterson, but his real name was C.B. Washington Patterson. He was given 700 acres of land by his father, who owned the plantation, and she was given 500 acres. And they put it together and made the township of Patterson. And I'm very proud that my great-grandparents, who came out of the slave era, their parents were slaves, but they were not because of where they came from. In the 30s, when everybody was going through the Depression, their children had been born and their children were allowed to go to Hampton and Sydney University. Pop Patterson was the first black Republican in North Carolina. He was a proud man, seven children, only two of them who died in a car wreck did not go to college. And the whole town worked as sharecroppers for him. I started singing in the church when I was 4 years old. My father was a singer by the name, he went by Prince Paul and the Swinging Imperials, which right now I'm trying to find an attorney to represent him. His song that he wrote for my mother in the beginning was the number one hit song in India, and they're selling it on iTunes and Amazon Records. My mother was a mental health worker, and she had been a secretary, and I was Prince Paul and the Swinging Angelic Angels. At 4 years old, I sang in the church, and I grew up in the church. At the age of seven, my mother moved me here to Roanoke, Virginia, away from family. And this place was crazy when I moved here in the 70s and 76. I remember distinctly riding down Campbell Avenue and a Cadillac pulling up, and all these beautiful women that were extremely tall, they looked like Amazons, getting out of the car. And I asked my mama, I said, "Mama, what are those?" She said, "They drag queens." I said, "I want to be a queen." And she smacked me all the way in the back seat of the car. I thought, you know, because they wore crowns and stuff. I didn't know that they were transvestites. Didn't know what it was. My mother worked for Hajira House, which was a drug program. And it was an experimental drug program that the governor and the them had gotten together. There were people who had over 150 years that would come to this house that had a drug problem, and they had to stay there for 24 months. If they completed the program, then they were released, and they had no guards, no guns. And I was able to learn a lot from people who had lived lives that was just crazy and amazing. One gentleman I never will forget, he was an African. He had 260 years for marijuana. They had sentenced him to that in Richmond, and he had come out from the old prison called The Wall. Y'all are too young to remember the downtown prison in Richmond. It was there since the Civil War days. So, Lord, I didn't know it was that late. It was amazing to me. I went to school. I was the first black kid to live in Raleigh Court area. My mother, having a job making $16,000 a year in 1976, that's what bank presidents make. You know, she was appointed to the Board of Behavioral Sciences by Governor Robb. So I was a latchkey kid. My mother started a black women's group. So mama left for work at 8:30 in the morning, but she didn't get home until 10 o'clock at night. So I'd have to be in bed. It was just me and her. And I grew up in El Rey Apartments. There were no other black people there. I take it back, there was one. He was on Channel 7. But as far as children go, and then the government started doing Section 8 and some of the apartments around us started having children. And I was a smaller child. I'm not now, but I was then. And I started getting picked on all through school. My friends were at Virginia Heights, and because I was black, they moved me over to Raleigh Court, which was way farther from my house. I could have walked from my house to school if I wanted to, but they put me over in Grandin Court. And then when I rode the bus would take me to Virginia Heights and then take me home. Didn't make sense to me. So life was good. Around the age of 12 years old, my mother met a man by the name of who was dead, thank God. My mother, he beat her real bad one night. And a Roanoke City police officer who just recently I forced the city to retire him, I was 12 years old. He said, the black bitch deserves it if she's stupid enough to stay with him. Now, he had beat my mama, pulled a bedpost off, and beat my mother unmercifully to the point to where she was never able to go back to work again. And before then, he had molested my girlfriend, who went to North Cross. And while mother would be in the hospital, she would have to go to the hospital. She stayed there for a whole year at a time, but just when the year got to break, she would come home for a week so her major medical wouldn't run out. She had put in for disability and they wouldn't give it to her. And I went through that for a number of years. So by the time I was 13 years old, my grandmother, who came up and helped raise me, she passed away with pancreatic cancer. And it just left me in the house with the child molester. I used to drive a car at the age of 13 to get back and forth to community hospital or Lewis Gale, whichever one mama was in. And I was like an adult. And some of my teachers knew. They knew that I was at home by myself, but because of who my mother was, they didn't call social services to have me taken away. It got to the point to where we were about to lose our home. 2018 Top Hill Drive. The police had been there so many times. I mean, our deputy chief of police, I remember the first day that he worked. And my childhood was one that I try to forget, but it's ever before me. I was riding around with some friends on Salem Avenue and when we ran across the transvestites. And being 13 years old, I had lied about how old I was. I had to have proof, so I got fired at Burger King's for not being old enough to work there. I went to work at the bar that they called the Park. I got paid $20 a night to pick up beer bottles. That was not enough. The house payment was $240. The car payment was $100 a month. And my mother's medication, if she was at home, was $300 a month. And they didn't pay for that. I met a person that I call my saving grace. When I preach today, I still talk about my friend, better known as Miss Grace. Miss Grace was our first, second Roanoke at large, because they cheated her out of it the first time. She was about 6'8". And at that time, she weighed about 240 pounds. She weighed about 500 now. I started out, and she kind of gave me pointers and make sure that I didn't get hurt. And I was 13 years old at that time. It's a hard time to go back, because in the 80s, that's when AIDS first came out. There were 35 to 40 transvestites that was all up and down Salem Avenues. And the men could tell who was the real prostitutes, the women different from the men, because the transvestites actually dressed better. They dressed better, they looked better, they were clean, they were not dirty. And what I mean by that is, I mean, you could never find a transvestite in dirty clothes. But the real prostitutes, you could, and they usually worked on Campbell Avenue. I ended up moving from Salem Avenue down to Campbell Avenue, where the real women worked, because I could make more money. My mother had applied for disability from her job, and she had applied for Social Security, and it took her 8 or 9 years to get it. I was raised up in the streets by my friend, Miss Grace, and like I said, it's not something that's easy talked about. Over the years, I had to deal with a whole lot of stuff, but it caused police officers. There were some who thought that I was very beautiful, and I think I have some pictures. I got rid of most of my pictures because of my children. I didn't have sex for free. I charged more than anybody else. I learned something when I was younger by coming from a family that had money. If it costs more, it must be better. And so that's why I charged more than anybody else. So when I was 18, I was arrested for prostitution by, I can't believe that I can remember his name, it's been that long ago. But I never quoted him a price or anything. The vice was heavy. You know, the police was always trying to take us to jail, even for stuff that we didn't do. And he arrested me. And they were going to take me to jail, but knew who I was, our deputy chief. And he said, just write him a summons. I got a job at the age of 18. I was the first 18-year-old in the state of Virginia licensed to carry a handgun by the Department of Commerce Law Enforcement Division. I was an armed security officer. My mother and I drove to Richmond to get my license. That was the quickest way to get it. So I was working part-time as a prostitute, and I was working full-time as a security officer, and I was working 80 hours a week. And back then, security guards didn't make but $3.35 an hour. I rose through the ranks to where I was a lieutenant and a captain, and I made $5 an hour. So I would have all this overtime, but I still stayed out in the streets. Being out in the streets, I had ran into politicians, lawyers, doctors. So I was a target for the police department. there were people who wanted me gone, because at the age of 20, my first lover, John, died of AIDS, and I lost my mind. Crack cocaine had just come out at that time, and I was not a part of the drug scene. Before that, I had done exposés for Channel 10. God, how do I remember this name? I try to think, you know, whenever I would try to call out a name, I couldn't think of it. Anyway, though, I showed her where prostitutes would take their people, and I made a statement one time on TV. I said, you know, it's funny up there in the big tall buildings, they call them affairs, but down here they call it prostitution. And I got to the point where I just wasn't going to be bullied anymore. But when they arrested me, I could barely read. I was in school. I guess that's the part I left out. I had been sent from Patrick Henry to William Fleming because I lived in William Fleming's district. And a young man whose life I saved when we were in Boy Scouts, we were on a scouting trip, and a young man got raped by other boys. And I attended to him as the chaplain and the first aid guy. And I knew his pain. Well, one of the guys that I saved, that he jumped out the canoe like a dummy, and he could barely swim, and he almost died. I pulled him up to the bank, got him out of it. He turned around, and he and another boy by the name of, I was in ROTC, which was the only thing that brought me joy in school. And I was a captain, and then I went up to a lieutenant colonel. So I was the big guy on campus in ROTC. And these guys robbed me. I started baking brownies for the ROTC to raise money for them. And these guys robbed me because they knew that I had been on Salem Avenue, and they robbed me of $300. And $300 back in 1985 was a lot of money. And I went and told the prince, went and told the dean, and he said, "Han, they stole your brownies." Well, who was the principal, was a good friend of mine. He had been my principal in junior high school. And I went out to my car. The transvestites used to carry hammers and things of that nature, so they didn't get charged with carrying a concealed weapon. It's a tool. I had been taught by them and raised by them out in the streets. And as a Christian, I was angry because the God that I had been told about, that I served, was never going to let nothing like this happen to me. However, I went and told my mother about one night the devil and the Lord got to fighting over me. I was 9 years old. This is before this mean man came into our life. And I told Mama, I said, Jesus won, and he told me that he was going to always be with me no matter what. You know, I said, so I know I'm saved and I'm all right. And then the devil stepped into my life, this man, who my mother loved, and I could never understand why. You know, she had empowered black women through her group not to stay with men that beat on you. But yet and still she stayed with him. She ended up shooting him. And I was whisked off to North Carolina for school. And I was only down there for a month, and then I got kicked out of school for being smarter than some of the teachers, even though I was not that smart. It's just that North Carolina schools were on a different level than we were. We took physical science and we took biology in 7th grade and 8th grade. Well, physical science was a 12th grade class for them. I'd already had it. So I grew up a pretty rough life. And there were times when I did not have food to eat. And my mother was in the hospital. But I made it. You know? People ask me all the time, do I regret what happened to me in my life? And I tell them, I don't regret anything that I've done. I regret that I was lied on and put in jail for crimes I didn't commit. I had caught some easy breaks, but when I got from the age of 19 to 23, it was the worst time of my life. My friends are all dying with AIDS. I got strung out on drugs for approximately a year. I smoked up $343,000 worth of drugs, and that's something I've never told anybody. But my mother said to me, she was getting Social Security and stuff by then, she said, I don't want to see you again till you get off that. She didn't say mess. She said shit. And my mother was the most important thing to me in my life. So that's how I overcame drug addiction. I got on my knees and I said, Lord, I haven't talked to you in years. But if you're real, take this from me. I love my mother. My mother had me put out at the age of 18. Same man that raped me, she, the very first time I ever went to jail, I guess I left that out. I was at the house. I had my own place then after she had me put out, and he was there. And we were playing cards, and he walked in, and this man had bullied me all my life. And he backhanded me, he slapped me. And I told him, I said, you know, that was okay when I was younger. I'm older now. And I told Mama, I said, I'm going to kill him. And I went out the front door. And she locked all the doors. What she didn't know was the window to my old bedroom wasn't locked. And I came through the window. And I was going to shoot him. And I told him, I said, you're not worth shooting. My mother knew my temper. When the police came, and they didn't like him anyway, so they weren't going to take me to jail for beating him. But my mother said he pushed me to get to him. And they locked me up for assaulting my mother, which I didn't realize. I would have never pushed my mother on purpose. I went to jail, and I was there for 3 or 4 days. I was going to lose my job. I was working as a security guard then. And the greatest man I ever knew came and got me. He just died 4 months ago. I worked for him at Lakeside. His name was, they called him Roger Rabbit, Lakeside family. I ended up being the president of the company, which was a real laugh because his daddy hated black people and people who were not Gentiles so bad. I have a sign in my home that says Gentiles only, Lakeside. They would only let the black people swim in the pool on the last day, and then they drain it and wash it with Clorox. But his mama said if we let him go, he'd kill his man, which I probably would have. And he told Roger, he said he knows everybody. I didn't have any money, got me out of jail, and said to me, how'd you like to work for me? And I said, well, what I need to do? And he said, well, I'm looking for this woman that jumped bond. And I said, I can find her in an hour. And he said, yeah, right. I said, no, I can find her in an hour. I assure you I'll find her within an hour. So he brought me out of jail. I found her. Not only did I not pay him, but he gave me $500. And $500 was a lot of money. But I had actually made more than that. I used to charge $250 an hour. I had a room in the Patrick Henry up near the top. They had apartments up there. But I kept a room at Thrifty Inn because that's where all the prostitutes were. And that's, you know, I had this thing about me. I got so I wouldn't just go out with anybody. I had guns pulled on me, knives pulled on me. I had baby fat, you know. It's like now I can't get rid of it, but, you know, I didn't wear fake boobs. And I had a nice shape, and I had a pretty face. And I had long hair. And I used to laugh and say, my mama said, never trust a big butt and a smile. And I would tell them this before I got in the car with them. Just imagine all of your friends are dying. And then the city comes up with the thing that guess kind of made me a little famous. They came up with city solicitation ordinance, and they came up with it to only get transvestite and homosexual men in trouble. They wrote up a law that says that anybody who, for the purposes of having sex, takes anything in consideration shall be guilty of a first-class misdemeanor, violation of the city ordinance. And whenever they actually adopted this law, I was at city council meeting that night, and I was dressed as a boy, and I said to them, y'all can't do that. And they said, you need to sit down and be quiet. I said, look, I'm a registered voter. I have a right to talk. I said, now, you can't take out an element of a crime. I'm not a lawyer. But any idiot that's ever did anything with law knows you have to prove all the elements. They convicted 387 people on that. I was the 388th one. I was the very last one that they had to come to court on it. And they gave me, who's a tax attorney. Never. They appointed him. And we laugh about it when I run into him at the bank. And I tell him, I said, stick with me, boy, and I'm going to make you famous. And there's a picture of me on the steps of the courthouse holding my briefcase. And I actually wrote the legal brief that told a judge who had always put me in jail. I said, judge, if you remember, I wrote the paper for Sterling Preston versus Commonwealth, where you were the judge and you found Mr. Preston guilty for violation of probation simply because he had been arrested. And his prostitution charge, he was found not guilty of. And you had already violated his probation. So don't tell me I can't appeal something. I said, and the nice thing about it is you might as well give me a bond. Because if you don't, I'm going to appeal that. I'm not going to sit over in the jail for 36 months. He said, what is your grounds for appeal? I said, abuse of judge's discretion. He said, anybody used that since 1922? I said, yeah, I know, ain't it nice that I came up with it. I was sitting there, he was the coolest lawyer ever. He was a man that was trapped from the 60s. He's in charge of capital murder cases now. That's all he does. He left the probation off the Office of Public Defender, and he is the public defender of all the capital murder cases. And he was fascinated with the transvestites, not like he sexually wanted, just the coolness of it and the nuance of it. I mean, the transvestites used to hang out in front of Billy's Ritz. That's what made Billy's Ritz so much money. People watching them get in cars and this, that, and the other. I came up with a deal with the chief of police, who's dead now, which said, if you will let me have a free hand, I'll kill prostitution in the city of Roanoke. So anyway, make a long story short, I was able to write the brief which got rid of the city solicitation ordinance. Then I appealed my case to the appeals court, and I knew I wasn't going to win, but I knew it'd keep me out of jail for 2 years. Then I appealed it to the Supreme Court, which I knew would give me another 2 years. When I came back, before his heart had been changed, but he still gave me the time. He said, "What's the difference between now and then?" I said, "Judge, if you're asking me why should you not give me the time, because I'm not that person that I was when the crimes were committed," and I said, "We all know that I didn't commit the crime." He gave me my time. I went to jail, did what he called judicial manipulation, and ended up letting me out of jail. But this is after I had been in deep isolation for 261 days. This is after I had been told when no faggot niggas gonna vote in the jail, and my absentee ballot was ripped up. I just got tired of fighting. When I got out of jail, Mr. Roberts gave me a job of being a bounty hunter. The state didn't regulate it. It was under federal law. I wasn't a convicted felon. I put a badge on my shirt, put a gun on my hip, and I started arresting people who jumped bond. In 1998, December 28, 1998, I'd been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and I had an inoperable tumor in my cerebellum. And so the doctor told me to call my mother and ask if I could come and stay with her, because I wasn't going to be able to take care of myself. "Hey, Bonnie, I'm getting ready to get out of here. Can you pause that for a second?"